Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. It is the three amigos and me today, Evan Bland with Sam McEwen, Tom Chattel, Dirk Chatlin, in studio to talk, well, about a reality that seems like it's changing all the time for Husker football.
What, are you the fourth estate?
I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to stay out of the way today.
Fourth wheel.
Yeah, sure. This is a tricycle, and I'm that spare tire.
Okay.
We're here to talk about a changing reality going on right now in Nebraska football. Coming off a win over Indiana, the Big Ten West is in shambles. Our pets' heads are falling off. Everything's going on. How are you guys doing today? What did you make of this weekend that just was in college football?
Say what you want about this program over the last 10 years, and we've said a lot, but it is never boring. It changes tumultuously week to week, like in the most unpredictable ways. I mean, even though the last 56 weeks, dating back to the opener last year, it's crazy how much this program changes week to week. And the latest case was no exception. Nebraska appeared, I think, dead in the water 7 days ago, and here we are considering them as a possible contender in the Big Ten West. It's ludicrous, and yet it's real.
It's a bit much. It's a bit much. But notably today, so Mark Whipple's comments, you were there, Tom was there, Evan was there. The comments today, I think, had a purpose behind them, even though he was kind of freewheeling or whatever. I think they're all trying to realize, by God, we could actually have a job here if we could win some games. And the teams in front of us aren't that great. Mm-hmm. You know? Like they're not half bad, but they're not half good either. And so like I think Whipple's comments today, and they were notable. Of the way that he talked, like I feel like I'm, you know, want to win more than these guys do, and I'm frustrated with their confidence, and I think they're trying to step on them a little bit and just see if they can step on them a little and they can win one more game, then all of a sudden that thing can start rolling downhill, because there is no team on this side, maybe other than Minnesota, that has a sort of internal confidence structure that's greater than Nebraska, maybe Illinois, but you just get the sense that something is unpredictable here, that Nebraska's been so predictably screwed up for so long that maybe there's just a tiny window, if they win this weekend, where something goes really haywire. And it may not be a good thing long term. I don't know if going 7-5 this year is good for Nebraska over the next 10 years. I'm just saying it's possible.
Well, and Sam, what I love about it, and this is, you know, the beauty of sports, and we see it all the time, there are so often teams that don't make sense why they're winning, mm-hmm. and they just keep winning.
Michigan State last year.
Michigan State. Yeah. Iowa in 2015. Yeah. Northwestern, 2 years
every
ago?
Every year.
Northwestern every other year. This is just sports. You know, this happens. A team sort of catches fire. They catch a little bit of belief. They find a little bit of an identity, and pretty soon they've won four games in a row. I mean, the Kansas Jayhawks are undefeated with College Game Day. Like, stuff happens that's not supposed to happen. Why can't it happen for Nebraska just once?
Hi. I like this story a lot. I like this coaching. I like the head coach. I like what's going on. There's a developing situation right now. I don't know where it's going. It may end. It may hit the brick wall Friday night in Jersey. I don't know. But Scott Frost, it was such a show and drama that it became stale. It really, you knew every week, okay, this is going to be a long, slow crawl, nothing to the losing season, and we're going to get nothing every week, and
they're all going to feel bad.
They're all going to feel bad. Mickey Joseph is an adult, and the adults are in the room, and the press conference. Casey Thompson sounded like an adult.
Yeah,
giving the injuries,
I like
the back and forth, the screaming on the sidelines, and yet they do it knowing that they have confidence in the coaches and that they're, hey, we're all adults here. We might win off some steam. It's not personal. Go do your job. It's a whole different feel right now. Can it last? I don't know. But today, not only Whipple says, hey, I'm not going to be here next year.
You know, I know.
But I mean, he's not. He told me that. He said, yeah, I'm probably gone. You know, because that's – all these guys are – I mean, they asked Bill Bush about having his family out there. First thing that's come to his head is his family – he starts crying.
Yeah.
And he's talking about – I know what happened there. That question would hit him right in the heart like an arrow. His family's followed him everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's all about when you're a coach, it's all about you and all about the next job. And now they got to pick up and they got to move again, probably. So he's crying about that. He's got me. It's raw emotion, man. We're seeing it. And the players played their ass off. They showed something we haven't seen.
They really did play hard.
I mean, for guys who couldn't tackle, all of a sudden now they can kind of tackle. Yeah. How did that happen? So
they did play hard.
It's a developing situation. Yeah. It's like, okay, we don't know where it's going, but you know they're going to Purdue next week. They sold that game out in August. It's a night game now.
Yeah,
they'll be ready.
Yay!
And they might lose to Maryland this week, and they might really be ready.
Right.
But Nebraska walks in there going, all right, let's go for it.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with what you guys are saying, and Tom's comments are appropriate. To me, it boils down to this. The charm of it is this. Nebraska is always supposed to win. Even when they're bad, Nebraska's supposed to win. Right now, Nebraska's not supposed to win. Like, I think everybody's realizing, hey, this is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to win. Right.
We talked about this last week.
Yes.
You brought it up last week, the identity of the underdog.
Yep.
That's not Nebraska, but what if it is?
Yeah, this year it might work for him just long enough to make this interesting. And I think Mickey, in the back of his mind, and Trev Alberts has given him positive reinforcement, there's no doubt about that, where I think Mickey feels like, man, if I can just get to 6, mm-hmm. I might be your head coach next year. And he's not the only one thinking that. Like,
that's right.
I'm talking to fans and boosters who are thinking the same thing. They're like, boy, if Mickey can string it together, get some momentum, I think people are really rooting for him to be the guy. Even if maybe in their head they wonder if he's the guy.
Right.
Their heart is telling them, let's root for this guy and hope it happens.
I get it.
I totally agree with that. I don't think it's a number, though. I think it's how you play. Now, eventually, if you got it to be, you can beat Wisconsin and Iowa the last 2 games, then wow. But I think it's what's he done to the program? What's his impact? And is it every week? Is it consistent? Are we next week? Can we talk about, well, they laid an egg in Rutgers, so okay. But what if people start for Tron Trev's list start falling through? What if they turn him down, and he comes down to the bottom of the list where, I guess I should hire him, but I'm not really into it. And then you got Mickey sitting there.
Yeah.
What if Matt Campbell, the great, goes 7-5? I mean,
Matt Campbell would come to Nebraska. You already know that.
I know.
You know that.
But would you take him over Mickey if he's 7-5?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's what I'm saying. You probably,
depends on Mickey.
You probably
record,
would,
right?
Because he's been a head coach. He's built something in Iowa State.
Yeah.
But again, he's already lost 2. He's probably going to lose more. So
yeah, no question.
I mean, it's an interesting situation, but
put it this way. People really like this team right now.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure they would have said that 7 days ago, but people who went to the game Saturday night, and I was not one of them,
right.
People who went to the game Saturday night came home and they said, man, that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
They really did.
And
right?
It wasn't just about the winning. It was about how they did it. And that's amazing in itself that he's taken this team that was Oklahoma and Georgia Southern was, oh, how are we going to lose this one? Now it's flipping.
Right.
Not all the way there yet, but wow.
Yeah.
What a start.
What did you guys see, though, that was sustainable from that? Like, that was a team coming off a bye with a ton of emotion, with a new defensive coordinator, simplified language. Like, that worked for 1 week at home against Indiana. What did you guys see in that game that could endure and maybe mark some success the rest of the way?
Pounding my fist. Hit it. Keep hitting hard. Keep flying around. Whatever Ty Robinson, whatever he had for dinner, give it to him again. I mean, you got to get these guys playing like that. And at some point, the best seasons are when the players take over the team. They grab the wheel of the car. They drive. The head coach is in the front seat. He's riding shotgun. He's giving directions, but the players make it work. That's what you got to do. Now, how good are the players when you start playing? You're playing Minnesota. You're at Purdue. Here comes Burt in Illinois. I mean, when all these things start happening, you go to Michigan, okay, but you're still playing hard. You're still playing with the purpose. I don't know. I mean, right now, it's just fun to see it do something different.
Well, what's portable is that Whipple's offensive scheme, and he said it again a little bit today, is you can they missed a couple of touchdowns during the game, and he's Eric, and that I mean that as a kind. Mark Whipple thinks that he can score 60 points every game. Like the way that they design their offense, we're not going to get into the weeds, but the bottom line is that they got a deep throw on pretty much every play, and he wants to air it out. He wants to go deep. I think Casey Thompson's getting better at doing that. The reality is you can go into an offense every single week and say, we're going to throw the ball 45 times today, and we're going to throw it deep about 12 times, and maybe we'll hit five of them, and maybe we'll score this many points. That is technically portable. It's also dangerous. I mean, you can get in a game where you throw four picks and you lose the game. But Mark Whipple is very aggressive, and he's very confident. And so I think those things are sustainable in the sense that you know that he's not really going to change that. The defensive effort is probably portable. There's going to be games where they play, like Michigan, where it's going to be punishing, more punishing than it was against Indiana. So we'll see. But, you know, I think they have – I was talking to a colleague today about this. The truth is, if you look at Nebraska's players, they don't have any less talent than pretty much every team they're going to play from here on out, with the exception of Michigan. And I include Wisconsin and Iowa in that because Wisconsin and Iowa didn't add any talent to their team. They basically didn't play in the portal at all. They chose not to do that. And honestly, as I look at those two teams, they're talent deficient. They don't have as many good players as they should because they didn't add anybody, but guys left. And I think Wisconsin added a UCLA corner. Well, Nebraska's added players. Maybe it's a little mismatched parts, but they're talent. Trey Palmer's talented, and Casey Thompson's talented. Trey Palmer's better than any receiver on Wisconsin and Iowa's team, and Nebraska did not recruit him out of high school. So I think it's little things like that. They have the talent. It's just a question of whether it coalesces. And as Whipple was talking about today, I think he thinks that they have a deficit of belief. Like, they're just uncertain of themselves.
Yeah,
and
that's... Well, I'm sure they are.
That's
why wouldn't they be?
That's actually how I feel, too. I don't think what we saw Saturday night was overwhelming enough to think that Nebraska's going to run off five in a row or something like that. But at some point, when good teams become good teams, the sum, you know, exceeds the sum of the parts. And the whole exceeds the sum of the parts. And I think Nebraska has a chance to do that in part because of the intangible forces, the adversity they've been through, the new leadership, the positive momentum that hopefully can come together. I don't think they're necessarily going to play well every week, but I'm not sure they have to play well every week. I think they just have to avoid clunkers and avoid, as Sam mentioned, you know, a bunch of negative plays. I mean, you look at why they won that game. The pump block for a touchdown is why they won the game. I mean, I really don't think Nebraska wins the game without that play.
Right.
And if they can produce one of those every week, I mean, if Trey Palmer gives you six touchdowns from here to Thanksgiving, why not? You know, like, it's not just that they won the game. It's that everybody had the same realization Saturday afternoon. Wow, everybody else sucks, right?
That's it.
It's that combination,
right?
Mm-hmm. It's not that Nebraska beat Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's really not.
It's the AFC South.
It's the AFC South effect.
That's what the AFC South is right
and that would
somebody's going to win that division.
Maybe the AFC West. It's
right.
Great shakes as well.
There's like an 8-8 division champion out there.
Yeah, that's what was so interesting about Saturday is that it came together. You know, it was Nebraska showing life at the same time that everybody else was falling on their face.
Iowa State almost won two divisional championships in the Big 12 North in the 2000s, and it wasn't because Iowa State was good.
Well,
Colorado won two of them, and neither one of them were any
good. Colorado went down and lost 70-3 to Texas. And I don't know if Nebraska wants to lose 70-3 to Ohio State, but I think that potential exists.
I think they'd love to try. I think the block punt was big, but after the block punt, in the touchdown, they were still tied at 21. So they still had to figure something else out.
They needed to hit the bomb.
I just, to me, look, you know, you don't know which Purdue you're going to get. There's been a really bad Purdue out there. That they've gone up from Minnesota. Minnesota was surprised by – they were a little flat. Anyway, everybody's got flaws, but can they get a pelt? That's, to me, would be the game changer for maybe Mickey, the conversation changer. Can he beat Minnesota at home? Can they rise up? Okay, Michigan, that's asking a lot. But Michigan isn't going to get up every week, and that they're going to look at that game like, oh, who cares about this? Can they beat Wisconsin and Iowa? Man, that didn't look like such a stretch, right? They played Iowa close the last 4 or 5 years, so it's not a stretch. I love this because it's something different. It's something there's hope that something fun might happen, and I don't know when or where, but I'm very interested in it.
So that day plays out. The Big Ten West stinks. Nebraska wins, and then the next day, Wisconsin fires its head coach, who had wanted more than a 70% clip during his time at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
What did you guys make of that? And I know you tweeted it out and got a lot of reaction on social media comparing that to the Frank Solich firing at Nebraska more so than the Bo Pelini. Maybe lay that one out as well, and why Wisconsin, which doesn't do things like this, made a gamble in this way.
Terrified of the Nebraska rebound, clearly, is what was happening there.
Yeah.
Feeling like, no.
I
go ahead, Sam.
No, go.
I just talked to somebody that I won't reveal his name, but knows Wisconsin very well. And
Sean Eichhorst?
Was very, not even close. But anyway, his former Badger was very disappointed that it happened. And his take was, They're worried about losing the coordinator, Jim Leonard. And to which I said, well, yeah, but isn't it easier to hire if you let Chris go all the way and then fire him at the end? Because now you might see Leonard's not very good at game management, and this and that. Maybe he loses some games that you didn't want to hire him. And this guy said, well, they just blame it on Chris. But he thinks they're going to hire Leonard, and then that's going to be it. That's why they did this.
Yeah.
So, interesting approach.
If Nebraska had hired Bo in 2003,
right
after that season, I feel confident that many Nebraska fans would have been like, okay, yeah, we'll go with that. But what they didn't like is what happened after Solich got fired and the embarrassment of the search. But if what they had done is said, we're going to fire Frank, and we see in Bo the future, even though I think we would all agree Bo would not have been good then either, or good fit. But if the Husker fans would have been like, well, yeah, that was the best thing about this team this year, and they would have accepted it.
I don't think this is about Leipold. In fact, I'm starting to lean toward I think he might stay. Mm-hmm. I really do. Especially now that Wisconsin's in the mix. He arguably has two jobs he really likes, two places he really likes. Oh, I can't decide. I guess I'll stay. I think that's very easily could happen. Plus, yeah, I think he would, after 2 years, tough. But what would it take for Nebraska fans or for Nebraska to say, okay, our interim guy, who is one of us, he's our guy. I don't get the feeling that's quite like Wisconsin and Leonard. We have to have a Badger. We don't know how good he is, but we have to have him.
Right.
Nebraska's Trev's not that way.
No, and I think the bottom line for Mickey will just be wins, right? Like, he's got to win enough games to make it palatable. Otherwise, people will look at it and go, well, they finished 4-8, and yeah, there needs to be a completely new vision. Maybe there's a sense that Mickey doesn't have a ton of experience head coaching. This is still a good coaching league. I want to go back to the fact that Chris was let go, and I think you're seeing more. The reaction to Chris being fired was very different than the reaction to Frank. When Frank was fired, it was almost like tearing a hole in the universe. What are you doing? Like, it was
national outrage.
Yeah, it was. It was very strong. And Trev Alberts wasn't outraged, but at the time, but with Chris, I think there was almost like a. Oh, well, they did lose Illinois. And so, like, there was this sense in the industry now that you just don't get as much time as you used to. You know, I remember Mark Richt basically being fired slash resigning about 5 years ago from Miami, not Georgia. I mean, Georgia, things had kind of run its course, and they got better with Kirby Smart, but at Miami. And Miami hasn't been anywhere near as good before or after when Richt was there. And they've kept shuffling through coaches. The guy they got there now is supposed to be the big answer, and they lost badly to Middle Tennessee State. I think there's just a real impatience today because of the amount of money involved, which seems counterintuitive, but there's so much money involved that the people who have the money want an immediate return on their investment. And even though Mel Tucker's got this giant contract, I guarantee you the person who's bankrolling that contract, which is a single donor, isn't going to put up with two losing seasons in a row. Mel Tucker's going to go 4-8 this year. He better not go 4-8 next year. There's just, you've compressed this space. And the other thing that's happened is NIL and transfer portal. And I think what I would say of Chris, and we will learn more, I think, as time goes on about why he agreed to a smaller buyout. If you're not willing to do NIL and to do transfer portal and at least give your team a fighting chance each year with its talent pool, you're going to fall behind. And I'm telling you, Iowa, if they lose 3 or 4 more games on the way out here, I could see Ferentz retiring. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to happen. You can't run a modern college football program and say, we're just not going to take any transfers. That's not appropriate. And it obviously, Iowa has no receivers. Their running backs are like 104 pounds. Their quarterbacks aren't very good, and they didn't replace any of them, and they had the free opportunity to do so. And the fact that Iowa didn't do that, and Wisconsin didn't really change their team, and they just sort of doubled down, and they said, let's put more money on the hard eight. It didn't work. And
look, I think at the whole Big Ten West right now. Yeah. This is a very important hire for Nebraska.
It is.
I mean, there are people who still think Jeff Brohm is going to go to Louisville. He turned it down early, just like Leipold. I'm just starting to build here. I can't leave now. But now they're saying he would leave. Regardless, the division is not very impressive. And
it's not.
It's in flux.
But it'll disappear. In two years, it'll be gone.
But I think
it'd be a 16
it's a very important hire, though, for Nebraska to get in that top five.
Yeah.
If that's what – that's how many the Big Ten gets in the playoff, who knows.
And that the idea that there's a division right now, it's going to be gone in 2 years.
Yeah, but generally you're still going to play the same teams.
Generally?
Nebraska's still going to play Minnesota and Wisconsin more than they're going to play Rutgers and Penn State.
Yes.
Maybe. I think they will play one of those two teams more, but I think they'll also play USC and UCLA more, of those. My point is that there is no, like, in 2 years' time, what Wisconsin had been doing for the last 7 years will be, it won't matter, because Wisconsin will finish sixth in that league if they keep being who they are. And I think their idea is, like, if we're going to win championships, we will no longer have a division of, average – off-brand crayons to be able to beat. We'll have to find a way to beat the very best teams in our league, or we won't be there. And so Nebraska needs to take heed of this too. 7-5 will get you 8th in the Big Ten.
How dare
in
you?
2 years.
How dare you insult Autumn Beige like that? It's really
in 2 years. It's 7-5 gets you 8th. It doesn't get you 2nd in the Big Ten West. It gets you 8th overall.
It's really interesting how it's become more like corporate America, where it doesn't matter what corporation you're the head of. If you have a bad year, your board might say okay, but a second bad year and you're out.
That's
like,
right.
It doesn't matter how much equity you built up. This is becoming like the rest of America before our very eyes.
It is, exactly.
And it's also fascinating to me that the situations like this that people used to mock and laugh at, that writers and fans and analysts, look at them, they're firing their coach again, look at all that instability. Now everybody's doing it. Like, everybody's just decided, whatever.
So Nebraska was ahead
There's
of the curve?
There's four superpowers.
Was Nebraska ahead of the curve?
I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, Nebraska is such a crappy situation, Evan. They're in such a crappy situation with Frost that they had to get out of it. There was, I think they pressured Riley out too quickly. I've said that before. But with Frost, they probably waited too long.
They were worried about losing Frost.
Yeah, I mean, they waited too long.
To your point,
Frost,
Sam,
honestly,
Michigan was going to fire Jim Harbaugh.
They were.
In if he would have gotten off to a bad start last year.
Right.
I mean, they were six bad games away from firing Harbaugh. Ohio State, you think they're going to tolerate, you know, a year and a half of bad Ryan Day if that goes? No way. They're going to cut him loose faster than...
The money doesn't mean anything anymore. I think that's one of the lessons. It's like, well, you know, the buyout prevents it. Buyout prevents nothing. There are very wealthy people out there who are willing to buy out almost any coach to
make
them...
But the fascinating part is how stability has no value anymore. Right. Like, you used to say, well, money's one thing, but what are we going to sacrifice in terms of roster continuity and staff continuity and, like, the idea of actually establishing a program and the value of that, what Iowa, frankly, epitomizes.
Iowa has.
That has no value anymore because of the portal, because of how quickly kids develop, because of, you know, personal training at age 14 and how kids max out at age 18. And, like, it's just you can't sit back, and as much as I love to romanticize it, the idea of a four-year guy, you know, stepping onto the field as a redshirt junior, you know, when he's only played kickoff and suddenly he's a man at middle linebacker, that doesn't exist anymore, as much as I hate to admit it. And programs have just said, you know, there is no value in continuity. We're just gonna do what everybody else is doing. We're gonna be the NFL. It's the NFL.
It's become pro football, and you've got free agency period now. You've got coaches get firing after, I mean, yeah. So,
the thing that frustrates me and will for a while about Frost is you just think about the amount of effort. Again, I'm not using PJ Fleck as a potential candidate in Nebraska, but the amount of effort and constant presence and effort he has in building that program, the amount of effort that Brett Bielema puts into everything. His press conferences are 35 minutes long, all those things. And you just think, Nebraska did not have a guy that was putting everything into it all the time. And they deserve that player. Now, that coach, if that's Mickey Joseph, great. If it's somebody else, great. And then on top of having to put everything that you have into it, pour yourself into it, there's also additional things at Nebraska you got to be about that are you know, hopefully discarded, and, you know, like hopefully discarded going forward, that you don't have to be a part of, you don't have to stand behind a 160-man roster if you think a 120-man roster is sufficient.
And I felt a lot of what you guys are talking about in Lawrence last weekend, going down and watching Kansas State and or Iowa State and Kansas, and it felt strangely quaint. I mean, it's like, oh, these coaches are over here making $4 million a year, and hey, there are like seven media people meeting with each of these head coaches afterwards, and like the fans showed up and it felt like a spring game until like 20 minutes before kickoff. And like, I can understand why they would stay and not take the $8 million or the $9 million or whatever that Nebraska or Wisconsin would throw at them and just have a little job security.
Matt Campbell's
not going anywhere.
I feel like I'm listening to myself,
you know,
coming back from Orlando, Florida in November of 2017. I mean, I had the exact same response.
Like nine people to Orlando, didn't we?
Well,
Lee, Chris, I was the first one.
But I went down and I watched. It was the weekend that Nebraska got waxed at Minnesota. They gave up an opening kickoff return, and I was you know, watching it on my iPhone in the stands at UCF. And Frost beats UConn by 40 points, and nobody here believed that he was genuinely struggling with the idea of whether to stay or not. And yet it was so obvious to me the advantages of staying. Because like you just said, Evan, when you find a good situation, it's hard to change it. And Frost, I'm sure, regrets, you know, leaving. How could you not? But Leipold's going to have that same thought here in the next 2 months. Yeah. Like, man, they love me here. I could probably be the head coach here for 5 years and nobody's going to say a word to me if we go 6-6. Like, it's hard to leave when people are happy.
People knew what they knew about him was that he was next door neighbors to Bill Self, that he would come up. It's unbelievable the post game they have compared to Nebraska when you've got like 40 people in the weight room. You sit in these little theater seats and typically it's like four guys passing a microphone between each other. And then, you know, Leipold chats with them afterwards. He's not whisked away by an AD. You can chat and be real, and like, I get it. Like, why you would stay, even if you did double your salary. It was a totally different world.
And I used to cover those kind of teams, Evan, and it is, you know, different, way different. The whole feel, the expectations, You're not constantly writing stories about another. Back then, Missouri, KU, and K-State fired a guy every 4 years. But they didn't really need to. Just kind of like everything was what you're saying. I think today you can make money at those places. And you're on TV. KU's getting ESPN this week. I mean, you don't need to come. What does Nebraska give you that KU doesn't have?
Well,
TCU. And I think they're underdogs. But I'm saying, yes, Nebraska has certain advantages, but a lot of guys don't crave that like they used to. They don't have to. And you know what? Sometimes the dream changes. The older you get, you don't. I used to want that. No, I want this. That happens
a lot. It's like you have to be real at a place where it's harder to do it because of all the other stuff. It's easy to be real coaching a high school team or a small college team, but when you have so many other obligations and there's so much more, you're talking about the morality of the state, you're talking about millions of dollars, like it's just, it takes a special, uniquely skilled person to handle that, I think, beyond just the football stuff.
It takes somebody who kind of loves it. It's going to take someone who really actually wants to embrace the whole, the bigness of it. And if they're able to do that, then I think it'll help.
This is a tangent, but Sam, knowing Bo's personality, it never surprised me that he had an aversion for all of these things that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to talk to anybody. He didn't want to, you know, he had his close circle of guys. It surprised me that Scott became like that,
mm-hmm.
To the degree that he was. What is it, Nebraska that does it to these guys, or is it that those guys are kind of the way they are when they come here, and then Nebraska sort of solidifies that personality characteristic that makes them averse from wanting to represent the program and sell the program 365 days a year?
I think for some of those guys, and this is just my opinion, it is a misread of Tom Osborne's personality. Because I think to some degree, and there are people, everyone here has talked to Coach Osborne. Tom's probably done it the most, certainly done it the most. There's a sense of with Coach Osborne of like, it's like he hated it, and like he didn't like that part of it, and he resented the pressure, and he resented this. But I think his ego was big enough and healthy enough that he actually kind of loved it. He loved having the last word, and sometimes the last word was a national championship. And so I think it was a misread of his personality, and so I think people would borrow this resentment they thought he had. And if you really think about T.O., you think about he retired and he became a congressman. He then stopped being a congressman. He went and worked for Creighton. And then he stopped working for Creighton and he became the AD at Nebraska. Like, the guy loved the spotlight.
And he says yes to every public speaking engagement.
Then he went to the College Football Playoff Committee. Like, come on. Like, he actually was the all-day guy that did it the right way. And I think people misread it, though. And they're like, my role in this job is to feel a little beleaguered and a little overwhelmed and a little frustrated. And Frank was treated poorly.
And embittered.
Yes.
Embittered.
And I just think Bo borrowed it too much, but Bo owns that himself. Bo is, I mean, everybody knows who Bo is. Scott, I think, just took it on too much, and I think he was kind of a, you know, squinty, well, why are we doing
he
this?
He was that way from his opening press conference.
Oh, yeah.
Warning people not to talk to his parents. I'm going to lose it on all you guys. At his opening press conference.
He thought his folks were going to get like 10 phone calls a day or something like that.
I don't
that.
Know how he got that impression, but I think it was a misread on his part. And
you're right about Tom. Tom just liked, he wanted you to know that, you know, I don't like this, even though I'll do it. Well, but he did like it.
He wanted
you to think that, you know, you want, maybe I'm going to feel sorry for you, or I'm going to, you know, it's, but, you know, he's going to carry this burden. And, before every press conference, whether it was the Sky Riders or the weekly Tuesday press conference, well, here we are again, you know, after two questions. Is that it? Well, I can't imagine there's anything else to ask. And then when we'd go to practice, there'd be three of us. Lee, Eric Olson, Ken Hamilton, maybe I would show up. That's it. And, well, we just got done talking, didn't we? What else you got? And he would do one-on-ones for an hour and be fine. And then he'd go jog around. But he had to let you know, it's just so much. Yeah. And there were two Bo Pelinis. There was one that if you made the effort to get to know him, He would talk to you. Wouldn't give you great stuff, but he'd give you good stuff.
Yeah.
And he didn't like the whole thing in Nebraska. He didn't want to be part of it.
I think.
You know what I mean? But I'm just saying. But he would talk to you, but he didn't want to. He didn't want to deal with the recruiting.
He'd turn on you.
That recruiting stuff. But his personality was not right for that. And to be honest, Scott has always kind of had an awkward personality.
Sure.
Awkward socially, maybe the wrong. Hard to have a conversation with him, just off the side. And I think he tried to do it differently. He tried to tell a couple of jokes one time, and when he first showed up, he talked probably too much, said too much, and it came back to bite him. So then he started not talking at all. But the guy who handled it was Mike Riley. Whatever.
And there are people who didn't like him for that. Let's be honest.
But he was not overwhelmed by it.
No.
At all.
Not that part.
And he came from Oregon State where they had nothing.
Right.
So it's just...
But there's a group of people who feel like they have to be in the inner circle of Nebraska football.
Right.
And if they're not in the inner circle, then they have a problem with the coach. And they do. They just do. And Mike didn't have them in the inner circle, so they had a problem with it. And whoever the next coach is going to be, you've got to work through that. It's got to be like, hey, you know what? And I think Trev will do a better job of saying, leave the coach alone. You want to be in the inner circle? You can be in my inner circle. Leave him alone. He needs to win games. There's been too much of this, you know, Scott, come here. You're going to be in this club. I think Scott was overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, I actually think that the perception is, and this annoys me, the perception is that the media spotlight is so bright that a head coach at Nebraska struggles with that. I don't think that's what it is at all.
I don't. Okay? I agree.
And I think the media is partially guilty for creating that representation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes this idea that, oh, you know, the media wants to write a story every day. Well, you know what? That happens at Alabama, at LSU, at Georgia, at USC. Like, go down the list. Oklahoma, those coaches handle it fine. But what you just alluded to, I think, affected Scott more than I expected it to, and I think more than he expected it to, which is just everybody wanted to be close, you know? Like, former players and regents and boosters and the guy on the street. Like, they just... Scott walked down the street and everybody lit up.
Politicians.
And wanted to come shake his hand and invite him over for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo didn't handle that well. Scott didn't handle that well.
But why is that unique to Nebraska? What?
It's not.
I mean, who's comparable to that? Auburn, maybe, would be a school that would be comparable to that?
I think the biggest challenge at Nebraska is that there is this standard that was set by one guy. And that guy was unique and not only ran the football program a certain way, but had a very specific kind of personality, a Jimmy Stewart-esque personality that put up with people. You know, even though he grumbled, he just put up with people endlessly. And I just think that the expectation from there is, well, we want everybody to act like this. You know, like we want everybody to be a father, you know, open up his arms and every, you know, wayward soul of Husker football comes in for a chat. Like, I just think it's a high standard to set, and I think there were coaches that misread it. And, you know, let's be honest, too. Bo was way more out there than Scott was. Bo had a foundation and a charity, and well, we don't need to get into that, but, yeah. I mean, Bo did stuff. I mean, Bo did speaking engagements. You know, there were guys up here talking to churches in the offseason about football. John Papuchis getting in an argument with some guy at the Big Red Breakfast. All that ended under Bo because he didn't like it, but it never kick-started again. You know, Scott did it for a couple of different times. He talked to 27 people in Kearney. It's an open public event. Someone reports something that he says about Luke McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey, who doesn't know anything, gets mad, and then Scott doesn't ever want to do it again. And it's like, I'm not going to talk to anybody again. How I got burned. I'm like, you're in public.
But I think
so. Those kind of things. Just like he adult, was just
adult, the media adult. Stuff, yeah. Though. Scott, I think he believed that because I was at that thing in Kearney that you're talking about, and he was having an open dialogue with fans. It felt like he was trying to give a toast and kind of joking a little bit,
mm-hmm.
as the best man. He's like, you know, I see some media people out here. I'd really love to tell you guys what I really think, but you know, they're here right now, and I just think that part weighed on him.
Oh, woe is us. I mean, there's like 30 people there.
The baggage that he carried from being a player here, that never went away. You know, it's...
I remember writing this a long time ago that, but, you know, there's... I can't believe the former players... There don't seem to be any former players doing anything in Nebraska. They're, you know, nobody owns a steakhouse or a sports bar. Nobody's on the radio or TV. There's not a sportscaster who's a former Husker, like maybe Len Dawson in Kansas City, or you know, you go down the list, St. Louis, whatever. You know, I just keep believing that these guys don't get involved.
You wrote that way back when.
I take it back. I take all those words back. Now, everybody's got a radio show. Everybody's got a podcast. Everybody's got an opinion. And I don't think Scott handled that very well. I think he thought he was going to control the masses or the former player, and you can't do that. And he wasn't always popular as a player when he played here. And so if you're not going to win, they're going to bring that up. And but again, I think he got a little too caught up in some of that stuff, and you can't do that. But it's an interesting place because there are now a million radio shows, a million opinions out there, all on Twitter, and they're all poking a stick.
Yeah.
They're all pushing a button to see what they can get out of you. And the next head coach might have to have Trev run interference. There's a Nebraska alumni group, right, or a players group. I don't know if they can control they probably can't, but it's a big boy job for that. You've got to be able to, okay, the noise is over here. That's fine. I'm doing my job.
Well, and I would come back to an obvious point, but it sure would help to have somebody who's been through that somewhere else, right?
Lance Leipold does not.
I'm not arguing for Lance Leipold. Hasn't, right? I'm not saying he, I'm saying
who's Matt Campbell.
Who has?
I'm saying Bo struggled with that. Scott struggled with that. Personal feelings, you know, for Mike Riley are irrelevant, but he sort of understood it better than most.
And
right?
It's because he was a nice guy.
Right. I'm not saying he, you know, he'd had a ton of experience under the spotlight. But
well, let's talk about one reason that Mike took the job.
But one thing that Nebraska might want to look at is, have you been in this thing before? Right. Have you been in the pressure cooker before?
I think Mickey is kind of interesting there. I think he might be able to handle it. I don't know. But I think he's got a certain level of respect from some players that I don't think Scott did. And I'm going to sit back and watch it. But I think that's interesting.
Well, Mickey, I think, would be an interesting fit if he gets to do it his way. You're not going to be able to, over the course of 4 years, just say it's on me every single time something goes wrong and then not have a reporter eventually go, okay, so this has happened 5 times in a row and it's on you. So, like,
that's what Bo used to do.
I know.
Eventually, no, I'm saying it gets old.
Yeah, like, it gets old. I want to go back to one of the reasons Mike took the job, and this is, I think, relevant to Wisconsin. Nebraska has resources, and I know one of the things that Mike was frustrated about at Oregon State is they wouldn't give him a friggin' locker room. They just wouldn't give it to him. And they finally did get it, you know, built after he left. The reality is Wisconsin, if we're talking about Wisconsin, is kind of cheap. They're tight with their money. And all the way down to, can you take a smaller buyout? Like, come on, really? You don't have the money scrounging around? You haven't fired a men's football or a basketball coach for 30 years. You don't have the money?
Nebraska's done it like 12 times.
You don't have the money to give him? Like, we don't have the money. We don't have it. I mean, we haven't fired anybody since, you know, some guy that nobody even remembers, but we don't have the money. Like, come on. So they're kind of cheap. And, like, their stadium, which they kind of redid part of it, but that place is a dump.
It's a horrible dump.
And Nebraska's not like that. Like, Nebraska will pay the money.
I still like RC Cola.
Yeah, that's fine.
But you know what I mean?
One of the things that I think is appealing about Nebraska is that, like, they're going to have a brand new building. I was in a athletic administrator's office today. They have nice offices. It's still a cool place. You eat like a king. The players eat well. I heard this is an interesting story. So when a player transferred to Nebraska from a Nike school in the offseason, they went down to the trainer's room, and the trainer, Jay Terry, gave this player a stack of gear, Adidas gear. And the player said, "This is all mine?" And they're like, "Well, yeah. What do you think?" And he's like, "Well, I never got this much in 4 years at this other school." And that's because Nebraska's swimming in money. And so, like, there's ways that you can get kids to come. You have the best academic advisors. You have chefs that could work at three-star restaurants. Like, they have a lot of those things. And I'm telling you, Wisconsin is a spendthrift. Like, they don't do it. Their stadium is, like, ancient and scary. And a place it's like the bad part of town at night. Like, you would never walk in there.
It was East Germany 30 years ago. Yeah.
Well, East Germany was Rutgers a couple of years ago.
Yeah, because you might run into a drunk Badger fan. That's what you might run
into.
Well,
you did. That's right. You had somebody buzz you there on the street that time in 2011.
But you know what, Sam? That culture
I didn't have a beer.
That culture is established.
Yeah.
When you have a successful head coach who becomes an athletic director.
That's right.
Who decides that, hey, this isn't about...
I'm doing it with less.
Right.
But that's,
you know what's another school that's cheap is Florida State. Up until like the last couple of years, they didn't even have an
indoor facility. Osborne would have preferred it that way, right? Had he been AD forever.
They were just cheap.
Did you notice the little nugget Mark Whipple dropped today, though, saying another challenge with these guys has been being overprivileged?
Yes!
How about him
saying that? The most notable comment that was made, and again, I understand that it's controversial because... player welfare does matter.
Yes, it does. But like,
but he was saying that relative to how other schools treat their players.
And when you talk about Wisconsin and scrounging things, like that's not the worst thing in the world to have your players experience that. That sort of translates.
We've been talking about this forever, and Sam has hit it in post game, game stories forever. This idea that
it started under Bo.
The food truck outside the losing locker room, where Nebraska walks out to a 5-course meal, after losing 52-17.
The cookies at Purdue in 2015, they had a literal staff member there to cover the cookies from the sprinkling rain. Don't do anything with the cookies! You can't win. You can't stop Purdue from scoring 55 points. But there is literally a person who covers the cookies and then hands out the cookies. And then after Wisconsin in 2014, players don't want to talk. They got their hooded sweatshirts pulled up. But there's people literally in their face, "Do you want a pizza box? Do you want a sandwich? Mm-hmm. Take your sandwich." Like, it's unbelievable how well they're treated. And again, I'm not – player welfare matters. But Whipple was referring to that in comparison to what he saw at Pittsburgh. And I'm just saying that the stack of gear that the player got was like four times the size he got in 4 years somewhere else. Now, there's an advantage in that for coaches, in that they know that the athletes are going to be well taken care of. Now they just need to get a coach in there that's willing to do all the stuff. And I do think that part of the issue with Frost is he was about 85%. And then the last 15% was just sort of, I don't know, he just winged it. And you can't wing that 15%.
They need Shaka Smart. Remember that story from last year?
No, I don't.
Oh, my God. After Creighton beat Marquette. After Creighton beat Marquette last year, Marquette had the lead the whole game, losing the last minute. Shaka Smart's pissed. We get back from the interviews in the media room at the Chi Health Center. There is this giant tray of giant Dairy Queen blizzards. I mean, and these people from Creighton are going, "Wow, who did this? Everybody's grabbing a giant blizzard." I'm going, "I don't know. No, I didn't get one." But the Marquette writer came in and saw all these guys eating blizzards. He goes, "Oh, so that's where they went." He goes, "I said, what are you talking about?" "Well, this was the Marquette. This was our post game meal, and Shaka sent it down here." He said, "Nobody's getting anything.
No blizzards.
You don't get your ice cream. You choked. You lost. You don't get your ice cream.
Ice cream.
That's what Nebraska needs. They need Shaka Smart. Yeah. In charge of the Chick-fil-A wagon."
No, it's at Nebraska it's all packaging. It's no substance. And unfortunately,
it's a good point.
The post-game Chick-fil-A has been part of that.
Now, the thing that the volleyball team has, so again, the volleyball team is well-treated too. I mean, they are. But what they have is internal pressure. Like, if you don't perform up to standards, and people can argue whether John Cook should be like this or not, but John Cook recruits for you. So if you're not going to be any good, well, then you can find another school. And I'm conflicted about that. I mean, we've talked about this as it related to Kalen Meyer. Like, you know, you recruit an in-state kid, and they don't, you know, I'm going to recruit somebody over you. I don't love it. But
you like the sausage. You don't want to know how it's made.
Right. So, but they win. And I think the reason they win is because they, you know, they have an internal competition engine that keeps things fresh and interesting.
But that's Alabama. I mean,
that is Alabama.
That's how Saban does it, right?
That's how Nebraska volleyball operates.
We're going to make you great because we're going to surround people with people who are also great, and you can beat them out or you won't play. And that's if you can get to that level, that's a pretty good motivator.
He made a line. I think this was last year. He's like, you know, we're working on the NIL. We're pretty good at the NFL. Which is a great point. Yeah. Like, their NIL program is going to the league.
Yeah.
Who said that?
Saban.
Oh. He's like, you know, we're not going to have the same kind of NIL program as Texas A&M, but we're just going to send everybody to the NFL, and that's a pretty good program in and of itself.
All this stuff is going to chase him out. It's going to chase Ferentz out of Ezra, do I agree? I don't know when, but I think it's coming.
I think he's going to retire at the end of the year.
This year?
Yeah.
But it
they're going to go 6-6, and I think he's either going to have to let go of his son, or he's going to have to, you know, walk away.
Well,
you can't keep
Iowa fans have to be going, wait a minute, all these people are firing coaches, and I know that they love their guy, but they don't. There's a lot of criticism over there too.
I respect the heck out of him as a football mind. I don't agree with the way that he ran his program for the last 10 years. Clearly, there were issues with his strength coach and other things, but the way that he manages a football game, you have to have a lot of respect for that. The problem is he has a situation where his offensive coordinator is someone who's not qualified for that role and isn't qualified to coach quarterbacks, and it shows.
They had Greg Davis a long time ago, so he's always had issues with offensive coordinators.
Well, but Greg Davis was qualified. Coach Vince Young, I mean, his son has never coached a quarterback. He isn't a quarterback.
I don't think it was Greg Davis.
No.
Yeah.
I agree.
It was. The offensive coordinator was Vince Young.
What's interesting?
I understand what you're saying. There's
an interesting parallel that I'm probably stretching beyond where it should go, but back 20 years ago in high school basketball, there was a massive generational change in coaching because the old guys used to work, you know, they'd work from August to March, and then they would have time off. And what happened was in the 2000s, when recruiting became a big thing in high school basketball, you either had to be in on that and do it 12 months a year, or you had to get out. And so you saw all the old guys, with the exception of a few, Doug Woodard, Tim Cannon, they got out, right? And they were replaced by a bunch of young, energetic guys who didn't mind going to eighth grade basketball games. And so I think I could see a similar thing happening in college football, where the roster acquisition phase is so laborious and, frankly, tiresome that I think the old guys are going to get out, and even some of the young guys are going to get out, and they're going to be replaced by guys like Mickey Joseph, who love doing it, right? Who really crave that relationship phase and going out and finding, you know, the next big thing, even if he's on some other team's roster right now. So Mickey might be a little bit ahead of his time when it comes to being a college football head coach, because you know, I think as we move through this NIL and transfer era, his skills are going to be in greater demand from a head coaching standpoint.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
The NIL thing is really interesting. We're going to see Creighton opening up a new sports bar in the Capital District. It's a Mike Miller, the NBA player. He's got two of these places. It's going to be called Let It Fly, and I'm not breaking any news here. I think a lot of people know about this, but it's going to be NIL based, and they're going to invite players into the bar to hang out with people, who then and they will get paid by their NIL people to do that. That's going to happen also when I believe downtown Lincoln is going to get a similar place. I think the radio station is talking about doing that. I don't know if it's NIL, but these things are going to start popping up.
We'll have more on that in the next 2-3 weeks.
And I don't mean to.
No, you're not.
But I will say Greg McDermott is not a big. He likes the NIL. He wants his players to get, but he's old school too. But he's learning you got to adjust. Mm-hmm. And I think I agree. I think a guy like Mickey Joseph is going to fit in.
That's actually a good point. Both of them, really. But I really hadn't thought of it that way. But I think
that'll be part of the
that's a good point
interview process.
Absolutely. No, just I mean, and granted, Kirk Ferentz has skills that Mickey Joseph doesn't have.
He does.
Okay, but
he knows the value of a punt.
A good
the full value
of a 4th and 4, 38-yard line, pin him inside the 8.
Yeah.
But do you want to recruit against Mickey Joseph? No.
Not really.
I don't want to.
No.
And that doesn't mean that he's you know, got all the skills necessary to be a head coach, but I just think that as the roster stuff changes and how you acquire talent changes, I think guys like that who really are relationship builders, specifically with, you know, with the credibility that Mickey has, I think it's always been a critical component of being an assistant coach, a good assistant coach. I think it's going to be a bigger deal in head coaching circles.
You think Nebraska wins this week?
I do.
Yeah,
I think they do.
Are you going to go out to New York?
Yeah, we're going to, hang out at Central Park?
Sure.
Maybe?
Yeah, we'll go there.
If we get there in time.
Throw the frisbee around.
Yeah, here we go. I think so. I think what they showed Saturday, I think some of that's portable. They carry on, so to speak. You know, Rutgers is sort of the anti-Indiana a little bit. Can't move the ball. Decent defense. It's another game you got to have. And, like, it's such a fascinating evaluation, right? Because it's not just how does Nebraska do, but how do they do in the context of their division and their peers. I think they get it done. What do you think?
Sure. I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't know either.
I think Rutgers is gonna be a very different kind of opponent. They'll run the ball a lot. I think Nebraska is going to be tested that way.
What is the most interesting Nebraska at Rutgers game so far?
It wasn't the one two years ago.
Yeah, oh, come on. Nobody was in the stands. It was December 20th.
I'll never forget.
Well, no, you said the game. The game was really interesting.
I'll never forget that experience.
4 Martinez turnovers. They come back and win it anyway.
There wasn't anybody in the stadium. There's police officers and multiple German shepherds at the front gate. Felt like a war-torn situation. And that's all there was. And then the press box was open, and it's 9 degrees, and we're all sort of just in there freezing, and we're eating our Jersey Mike's, which was fitting, you know. Go down the two doors. The box is in there. Get the box. Come back here. You know, it was just a... Bill Moose wasn't there.
There haven't been that many, Dirk. I mean,
I would read an entire book dedicated to Sam McHugh and Tom Chattel and Evan Bland telling stories from the road. And I've been part of half of those.
You've been part of some of them.
But my memory is a little bit weaker than yours when it comes to the details.
You've been part of some of them.
I think the beginning of the book would be driving from Chicago to Omaha with that air conditioner, windows down.
Late July.
Yeah.
That was awful.
Where did we stop? You remember the time we stopped to get food?
Oh, yeah. A DeKalb.
That's right.
Home of the Northern Illinois. Who came back and got Sean Eichhorst fired.
I'm pretty sure all we did was get out of the car so we could, like, you know, air out.
I was like a dog hanging out.
The windows were down, and it was no cooler. So all it meant was it was quiet because no one could talk because the wind of the interstate was going. So we all just kind of sat there like baked zombies.
That's right.
This segment of the podcast is dedicated to all you 21-year-old college students who want to be sports writers someday.
Okay.
All right.
How we doing?
We'll wrap it up. We're off to Piscataway this weekend. Nebraska continues. The storylines abound. For Dirk, for Tom, for Sam, I'm Evan. Thanks for listening to the Pick 6 Podcast.
All right.